Hello, everyone. It's Joe Crump.
Hello.
Welcome to Joe. Welcome to the call.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, my name is Julian from
Florida. Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Hey, guys.
Hey, Joe.
It's good to have you all on. I know we got quite a few people on the call, so let me kind of give the ground rules so we can kind of try to make it something that's workable. I've got about 500 people on my newsletter list, and there's probably only going to be about 40 or 50 people that show up on this call, but any noise that happens in the background where you're at, we will hear, unless you go into a mute. But if you're in mute, I can't hear you ask questions. So what I'm going to try to, and I could also go into conference mode if it gets too noisy, but I'd prefer not to do that. I'd like to keep it open. Right now it's kind of peaceful on here, and that's good. But if you know there's going to be noise in the background, press *6, and that will mute you. And if you press *6 again, it will unmute you, and you can come back and we can hear you again. Wait a second here, because everybody's doing that. Now, the whole purpose of this call, and I do this 3 or 4 times a year just for you guys. The only purpose of this call is for me to answer your questions, and so I'll open the call up and I'll let you ask me any question that you've got. And the way I'd like you to do it, since we've got quite a few people, I'd like you to do it by just saying your name. And whenever I say anybody has a question, let me know. Just say your name out, and then I'll repeat that name, and then you can ask your question. Everybody else, please be quiet. Also, don't put us on hold. If you're at your company or whatever, don't ever put us on hold, because we'll hear the music that you've got on hold in the background, and it just completely will destroy the call, and I'll have to go into conference mode to answer all the questions. So, I think that's kind of the ground rules. Oh, I also have this audio will be posted online, so you'll be able to listen to this later, and we'll probably go either an hour and a half or until we get all your questions answered, whichever comes first. All right, so I'm going to open the call. Who's got a question for me?
Hey, Joe, Bob Bowman.
Bob, how's it going?
How you doing?
Finally going to talk to you on a public call.
Yeah, I thought I'd make a guest appearance here.
How was Europe? Yeah. How was Italy?
Oh, it was wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, every time we see a plate of pasta on TV, we want to go back.
Well, me too. That's my son's favorite trip. So.
Us too.
I want to hear all the details, but we won't do it on this call. But
okay.
Well, it's good having you on the call.
Yeah, good to be here.
I don't think you have any questions for me.
No.
Bob, by the way, everybody is one of the he's been one of the team leaders for a long time, and he's been in went through my mentor program. He works down in West Palm Beach and is doing some amazing stuff down there. He keeps taking the stuff and refining it and making it better, and I always love to talk to him because he gives me new ideas that I could steal. So, thanks.
Sure.
Alrighty. So who has got questions for me?
Joe. Karen from Delaware.
Hey, Terrence?
Karen, like tearing up a piece of paper.
Okay, Taryn. All right. Good, thank you. What's
How do I help people who are with this subprime thing?
Okay, dial it again and just try, because see, a lot of people are calling in. You got the right phone number?
We can hear you talking. If you're talking about somebody to dialing in, we can hear you talking. So if you press *6.
641, Uncle. Uncle, 641. Yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
It's all right.
Try it again.
Yeah. And maybe I should have set these things up a little bit differently. Okay. I'm sorry, Taryn. Go ahead and give me your question again.
Oh, my question
is, Uncle.
How can I help
41
people get into houses that are
594.
The people who have subprime loans.
Yeah. Okay, try it again.
Interest only. Payments. How can
yes,
I help
long distance,
them?
Uncle.
How can I help them get that house taken care of, or get someone in that house?
Right.
And I know that the rate is getting ready to go up or whatever. How do I handle that?
Okay. For those of you who didn't hear, he asked how does he deal with subprime mortgages on houses where their rates are getting ready to go up, and he wants to be able to help them sell their property. Help them move their property. Are you using the for rent method? Which method are you using to find these leads?
I'm using the push button method.
The push button method. So is it the for rent method where you're talking to landlords and finding them through that?
So these this one particular person was a broker. The house was about in it's in a new development, and the house is in the high area. It's about anywhere from $600 to $1 million.
Okay.
And he can't move it. He can't move it. And he has interest only payments of $4,000, about almost $5,000, and the rates are getting ready to go up, and I just can't find anyone to take that over.
So what's going to happen to him if he can't find somebody to take it over?
He's going to have to keep making those payments.
Okay, so is he in a position to make those payments?
Oh, he said he is.
Okay, so he's taking a $5,000 a month hit right now, right?
Yes.
And his payment's getting ready to go up by how much?
Oh, I'm not sure. He didn't give me that information.
Okay. Well, you can ask these questions. So
right.
You need to get as many details as possible and use that. There's a form that's in that push button method that will help you break down all these questions. So you want to find out what the details are of his mortgage. How much is it going up by? What are the current payments on it? If he's in a position to continue to make those payments, and a lot of people aren't, but let's say he is, and he's got to make a $5,000 a month payment, and you know that you could find a lease option buyer for that property, but that would pay $3,000 a month. But his payment's going to be $5,000 or $50,000, and maybe it's going to go up another $400 or $500. He's going to be up to $5,500. So does it make more sense for him to pay $5,500 a month on a vacant house, or to pay $2,500 a month if you can get him $3,000?
Okay.
Which makes more sense for him? And you can ask him that.
Okay.
Or will he lose the property if he can't make it? I know nobody wants to keep bleeding like that. But he owns this property, and he's got to do something with it. He's either going to go into foreclosure, he's going to make the payments, or he's going to sell it. But he knows right now that if he's going to sell it, he's probably going to have to take a pretty big loss on that property. And I remember, that I know there are people out there that are actually taking loans out to sell their property. They're taking out personal loans that they have to pay off later of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 just to pay off their property when they sell it. So now they still owe that money because their value's dropped and they have to move and they can't make those payments.
Right.
It might make more sense to do it the way you're suggesting, or the way I'm suggesting here, is by you find him a lease option buyer for this property and you put him in there. It's only $3,000 a month he may be getting, because that may be what is the most you can get for it. If you can get more, sometimes you can get more, by the way. But if, let's say you only got $3,000 a month for it, and he needs $5,500, is he willing to take that $2,500 a month hit? It might make sense for him. If he's got a bunch of money in that property already, it might make sense for him. If he wants to hold on to it until the market turns around, which may be a year or 2 years or 3 years, that might make sense for him. If you do it as a lease option and get him his full price for his property, and he doesn't have any realtor fees, that might make sense for him. In the meantime, what you're going to do is go out and find a lease option buyer who's willing to pay the $3,000 a month, give you $10,000 as a lease option fee, and then you're going to sign it over to this guy. So you're in and out of the deal. You made your $10,000.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. And I can do that with no matter what the price of the house is, correct?
Absolutely. It doesn't matter whether it's a $100,000 house or a $500,000 house. And I just got off the call with I have a mentor group that I have, the 6-month mentor group, and I just got off the call with them 10 minutes ago. And one of the guys, he's got a ton of properties, and they're in the $700,000, $900,000 price range. He's got like 60 or 70 of them right now that he's trying to sell, because he's in Utah, and it's a tough market for high-end stuff. And when he's down the $300,000 properties, he can sell those very quickly. But his $700,000, $800,000, $900,000, $1,000,000, $1,400,000 properties that he's got, he's having a lot harder time. So I was talking to him about getting them to lower the price and the process that you have to go through to make that happen. Because sometimes it takes time for people to be able to be willing to accept a negative cash flow. So I told him, let's use an autoresponder process to help them get there. And have 20, 25 weeks, once a week he gets an email saying, here's where we're at, here's where I think you need to be, here's what's happening in the market right now. If you would lower your price, your monthly payment, we'd have a better chance of moving this property. So that's the kind of thing that he's going to implement, because he can't call back everybody. He's got so many people. Now you, if you only have one seller, then you could talk to him directly. But if you had 60 of them, it'd be hard to talk to them all. And you can automate this process.
Yeah, this is a brand new development, and the house is like only 2 years old.
Okay.
And as I said, he's the broker. He doesn't live in it. He was going to live in it. He lives somewhere else in another city.
Okay.
But he's getting pressure from his wife to sell it.
Well, I mean, and so he's got to decide, does he want to drop his price or does he want to sell it on terms where he can get his money, but he's going to take a negative cash flow. So he's got to make that decision. What makes the most sense for him? And by asking him these questions, you can find out. He'll tell you. You know, if he tells you, oh, it's none of your business, well, then say, well, you know, I'm just trying to help. You know, I'm just trying to solve the problem. And there's different ways that I can do it, but it depends on your situation and what you're trying to accomplish. Because I got some people out there, they can't make their payments anymore. I mean, are you in that situation? Are you in a situation where you're going to lose this property if you don't make the payments on it? Or are you in a position where you just don't want to make those payments anymore because it's bleeding you? And does it make sense to bleed a little bit or bleed a lot? Because there's not a great solution.
But he didn't want to do that.
So. Okay. Well, not everybody's going to want to, and he may not have to. If he's able to make these payments, he may not have to do that. And he may want to do it. He may not be willing to do it now, but he may take a lease option, and then later on do the subject too.
Right.
That may come later. So a lot of times it just takes people time to get used to the idea. First of all, to work with you. To find out if you're really going to follow through with what you say you're going to do, and two, to feel the pain a little bit more as they continue to bleed, because they're going to keep bleeding until they solve the problem.
Right. Okay, well, thank you, man. I appreciate everything. I appreciate everything you send me, and it's working. It's working. It's definitely working.
Well, good. I you send me an email when you get something together. I always love to hear these great stories.
Okay, thank you, Joe.
You bet.
I'm staying on and listening.
And Bob, you still on the call?
Yes, huh?
I know you work in these high-end markets, so if you've got anything to say on these things, speak up. I'm sure everybody would love to hear your perspective on this.
Well, they're certainly tougher to sell. I think what I try to do is play the odds, and I mean the profile of the person that I'm working with is somebody typically that's looking for a starter home, and they don't care about the granite cabinets and the granite countertops and the 42-inch cabinets, et cetera. You know, they're looking for a, you know, modest home in a modest area. And so for me, I try to stay focused in those properties, knowing that the odds are increased that I'll get somebody. I certainly have the opportunity to sell higher-end properties. I mean, people come to me, and obviously they're upside down their mortgages and all the things we hear about. But very often I just don't take them on because, again, the odds are that much lower that I'll actually succeed, you know. So I just try to play the odds and stay in the sweet spot of what I know is moving and what I know will sell quickly and stay focused on that. So that's where I am now.
But also those people, I mean, a lot of those properties, they did put a substantial amount of money down on them. I mean, and their equity has disappeared because the market's dropped.
Yeah.
But they may have $100,000 or $200,000 in some of these properties.
Yeah.
So for them, maybe taking a negative, you know, if you presented them with this idea, that might make a difference in what you're doing. If you said, look, you know, it's going to, instead of taking, you know, $6,000 a month negative, take $3,000 a month negative and put a tenant in there who potentially could buy the property. Maybe they won't, but at least you could ride out the market, you know, because, you know, if a year cost you $35,000, $36,000, you know, and you've got $200,000 in this thing, how many, you know, how many, you have to decide how much more money you have to throw out. But on the other hand, it might make sense rather than screwing your credit and you know, waiting to get back in your field.
Absolutely. And what I find is most people come to that realization pretty quickly as they're paying two mortgages and the house is empty 2, 3, 4 months. So, as you suggested with that autoresponder, suggesting as the months go by that you might want to do something, you know, half of something is better than 100% of nothing, which is what you're getting now. It becomes a natural process that they realize that I've found. So you're not really having to talk them into it. They go through stages. They're in denial on the front end, and as time goes by, they're more desperate, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They start feeling that pain a lot more. So you're using the autoresponder to do that for people and get them to drop their price? Have you?
Yeah. The way it's set up already is the way I've had it done. And so the people will get those emails back, and they'll send an email back to me. Well, maybe I should bring it down to 1900 or whatever. And I send them an email. Okay, good idea. You know? So
And it's a wonderful thing because it all happens for you. You don't have to mess with them. You never have to call them.
It really is. Once I plug it in, then they're getting those emails constantly. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's in the push button stuff, by the way.
It is. Yeah.
In addition to the mentor stuff, but it's just a series of emails that we use on autoresponder type of deal.
Yeah, that's a staple of my life. I use it every day.
Yeah, me too. So. As I was telling the guys on the last cause, it has made my life so much easier to automate all this stuff, and I only talk to people that are serious now.
Yeah.
So it's gotten to the point where now they call me. I don't even have to do any sales over the phone anymore,
right?
Because they call me and I say, here's the deal, here's what to expect, here's, you know, do you want to move forward? So it makes your life so much easier, and it makes the amount of hours you put in dramatically less.
Yeah.
And I just read a book that I thought was very good, and I want to recommend it to everybody. It's called The 4-Hour Work Week.
Oh, yeah.
And I was reading through this book, and I was thinking, God, this is how my life is set up. I'm already set up like this. And it's all about, you know, reducing the amount of work that you're doing by outsourcing and automating first and outsourcing second. And he's got a lot of great ideas, and it's one of the best books I've ever read on this particular subject. You know, some of it's kind of hokey, but I think on the whole, it's really a good read, a very quick read too. All right, who else has questions?
This is Keith from Keith, Baltimore, Maryland.
Keith.
Okay. Yeah, how you doing, Joe?
Good, thanks. What can I?
My question is, I'm just starting out. I just got your program, so I'm fresh fish.
Okay.
My question is. How would I present, present a no qualifying, no money down deal through a real estate agent?
Well, I wouldn't go there as your first deal, first of all. I mean, there's lots of ways that you can do it. There's lots of ways you can work with an agent. But I would go out and try to do it a little bit differently. Do you have any of my programs at all, other than the cash flow?
Yes, design? I do. Yeah.
Which one do you have?
I have the ultimate cash flow.
That's not me. Do you have the stupid proof set or the push button set?
Excuse me?
There's one called the stupid proof set, and there's one called the push button set.
No, I don't have the stupid proof set.
Okay. So let me give you then an example of something that you can do that's pretty easy to get started with. This is in the push button method. It's called the for rent method. This was originally this original design came from Ozum, and then I took it and made it legal and made some changes to it so that it would work. But it's in the push button method.
Okay.
But I'm going to give you the basics of it because it's pretty simple. What we do, and I do this is what I do with my new mentor students when they first come into the program, and it's also what I teach at the buying events where we go and we buy properties in the room. So this is something you can do from anywhere with just a telephone and just a newspaper. It's a really powerful, easy way to get started in this business where you start making money without using any credit, without using any down payment. So this is a good way to get going, and we call it the for rent method. What we do is we'll get the newspaper out, the Sunday newspaper, and find all the ads that say homes for rent. And then we start calling those landlords, and we ask those landlords and say, hey, would you consider selling your home rent to buy rather than just renting it? And we find that about one-third of them say, yeah, I'd consider that. And then what we do is we put together a lease option agreement. I've written a lease option memo, just a one-page agreement. And you could use any kind of lease option agreement, but the lease option agreement's easy because it makes it possible for them to back out of the deal if they want to and makes it real easy on them. But what you do then is have an agreement between you and them that you're going to buy it on a lease option. But it also says that you're allowed to assign it to somebody else. Now, this is a very important part of the process because it makes you a principal in the transaction. It makes you gives you the right to sell it without having a real estate license. If you're a principal in a transaction, you can sell your own property. You can't sell somebody else's property unless you have a license. So you want to be a principal, otherwise you're breaking the law. So you use this document to make you a principal, and basically it's just a lease option between you and him. Now you go find a buyer, and you find somebody who wants to lease option the property, and you're going to charge them a lease option agreement or lease option fee, and the first month's rent is typically what you get. The first month rent is going to go to the landlord as his first month's rent, and you're going to keep the lease option fee. So let's say you go out there and And you've got a $400,000 property, and you get $10,000 for the lease option fee and $2,500 for the first month's rent. You're going to pass on the first month's rent to the new guy or to the seller. You're going to keep the $10,000 for yourself, and the deal's done. You're going to have to put the paperwork together between the new buyer and seller. It's going to be a new purchase agreement or lease option, and that's right. That's it. And it's a very simple, easy way to make money. You're in and out. Finding buyers is not very difficult. Finding sellers is not very difficult. And when I first started in this business, finding the sellers, that was the hard part. I was like, oh, how can I get people to accept these zero down deals? And then we discovered these easy ways to do it. This is one of those easy ways. You know, we can also do subject to and multi-mortgage and land contracts, and we can do other things, just straight assignments. But all those things became much easier when we started to learn how to do the marketing to make those work and to bring people in. And then the difficult thing became the buyers, because the buyers were always easy. But now the buyers seem more difficult because it takes us sometimes 30 days to find a buyer for these deals. And we can go out and get a seller in a matter of a few minutes. I mean, literally get on the phone and within 5 minutes, 10 minutes, we've got a deal together. So getting the buyers didn't get any more difficult, but getting the sellers got so much easier because of the techniques that we used. Does that give you an idea of a direction to go?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. So as far as, because on one of your CDs you have how you pre-qualify your buyers, but, you know, that's done with either an autoresponder or when you put up a sign and then you have them call you to, pre-qualify them. What's another way to go about doing that?
To get the buyers or to pre-qualify?
Get the buyers.
To get them or to qualify them?
Both.
Okay. To get the buyers, the first thing I would suggest is bandit signs. You know, just straight ugly signs that you put out there. This is the cheapest, easiest way to do it. Now, there are some ordinances that you're going to be breaking if you put out bandit signs. So you have to decide whether or not you want to deal with that. But if you don't want to deal with that, then you just have to spend more money. But if you're willing to deal with that, and I've only known one guy to ever get fined for putting out signs, and it was a $35 fine. And he saved so much money on his other, and actually he put out 100 signs in one little small town. It was like a two-block town. And he put 100 signs out there, so they fined him. But I've never seen it happen to anybody else. Usually they just ask you to take them down if they have a problem with it. And when I still use signs. And when I put out signs, I'll get a call. Sometimes they say, take my signs down. I say, okay, I'll do that. But usually they get taken down by somebody else, so I don't even have to go out and take them down. And I don't usually worry about it. But the sign results that you're going to get are going to be much higher on signs than just about any other source that you use. The other great way to, and the sign, if you're looking for rent-to-buy buyers, is rent-to-buy, no qualifying, and a phone number. If you got a website that I use a website too, you can do that. The push-button method has websites included, so that's something else to think about. The other thing that you can use is Craigslist. It's been a great source for us lately, and we've been using that all the time, and that's been bringing in quite a few buyers. Plus, they're more specific because you put the picture of the house in, your description of the house, so when you get those buyers are more specific to that specific property, it's a little easier to get them. The thing is, you want to build this buyers list. You know, I've got a lot of students right now that have buyers lists over 1,000 people on this that want to buy properties. And it's very difficult for them to go through and qualify and talk to all these people. So they have to automate the process. And that's what they use the autoresponders for. That's what they use the email blasts for. That's what you use your websites for. All that stuff happens, makes your little job a lot easier. But as a beginner, your main thing is to talk to as many of them as you can and find out how much they've got for a down payment. The first question you ask a buyer when you're talking to them, when they call in, is how much do you have for a down payment? You don't tell them that your property is needs $5,000 down payment. You ask them how much do you have for a down payment. If they tell you they've got $2,000, then you tell them, man, if you had three, I know we could make this work. If they tell you they got $5,000, man, if you had seven, I know we could make this work. Can you come up with seven? If they tell you they have $20,000, man, if you had $25,000, I know we could make this work. So wherever they're at, you're trying to negotiate more to find out if they really have more, if they might have more money than that, because you want to keep moving them up. But if they tell you, I don't have anything, I said, well, what were your plans? I mean, if you're just going to rent, you're going to have to come with the first month and a deposit. You understand that, right? I said, yeah, but I don't have any money right now. I said, well, if you come up with money, then I can help you. If not, I can keep you on my mailing list. Would you like me to do that? And get rid of them as quickly as you can. You know, it's good to keep these people on a list, though, because people that don't have any money today, they may have money 2 months from now or a year from now. And you'll find that if you create this list of emails, you'll be able to monetize that for years to come. Does that answer the question?
Okay. Yes, it did.
All right, good.
Thank you.
You bet. Who else has a question?
This is Barry in Arizona.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, thank you. First time I've talked to you, Joe. I've got your push-button method, which I haven't really implemented yet. I've also got your zero down and all those tapes with Plasm on and your other guys. So I've just got started, but I need something to kick me into my first deal here. I've had some signs out. I've got 3 homes right now that sellers are asking me to help them sell. They're, 2 of them are really upside down on their financing. They're actually willing to take loss in order to rent it out. And then I do have beginning of a buyer's list. I've got about 6 or 7 buyers now that have asked me to help them. So I'm trying to figure out how to juggle this and the details on going to closings and so forth.
Okay. Are you doing them as for rent deals?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, lease with option to buy.
Okay. So you've done the lease option memo with them. With how many?
With the sellers, yeah.
Okay. And how many did you say you had?
Actually, 3.
Okay, so you got 3 places. You got lease option memos for all 3 of them.
Yeah.
They're willing to take what would be market rent right now for the monthly,
yeah.
Even though they're taking a negative on it.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're not and all they want is the first month's rent, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
good.
One of them that's a no because he knows he needs to replace a roof, so he's saying I need some cash up front. we've agreed on an $8,000. Assignment fee there, which I have to give him $4,000.
Okay, so there's a possibility he won't get that, and then he has to decide, is he going to come up with that money himself?
Right.
So what I would do is, over a little bit of time, if as you continue to try to sell this, if you're not able to get that money for it, then you talk to him about it and say, maybe it makes sense for you to not charge for that, because you're bleeding right now. At what point do you want to stop bleeding, or at least slow down the bleeding?
Yeah, and I was on the line to hear you talk about the bleeding with one of the previous questions.
Right.
So that was good. That was good advice. In that particular house, I don't think I'm going to be able to help him because he's asking too much money. He's asking $320,000 off what I think is really a $290,000 home. And he's asking a little too much rent for the area. So I put my sign out there mostly to attract buyers, and I'm getting a lot of them. So I'm happy to have my sign on the yard.
Yeah, I mean, just having the sign in the yard will get you, will build your buyer's list. But yeah. But in the meantime, put him on. Do you have an autoresponder?
I don't yet. Okay. I haven't figured out how to set that up, and I've got to go back through your push button method again to find out who to use and how to do it.
Well, I've got somebody that can do it for you. He charges $500. I don't get any of that, and he puts it on my server, and I charge $79 a month for that. But that's mainly just because I bought a server just to help me offset those costs.
Sure.
But you can also go out and get a regular autoresponder anywhere. I mean, one shopping cart is $40 a month, and then you can set it up yourself. Rick does all the stuff he sets up is all those websites that comes with the push button method. There's a bunch of different websites, so it's a much bigger package. But if all you needed was just, yeah, send me an email, and I'll send you his contact information.
Okay.
And by the way, if I don't respond to any of your emails, whatever, it's because they didn't get to me. So I always respond to my emails. So send me if you don't get a response, it's because I didn't get it.
Okay.
But I'll send you his contact information so you can reach him and you can set it up that way if you want to. But if you want to, you can use Aweber, you can use One Shopping Cart. I like mine because it doesn't require a double opt-in, where some of these others do.
Oh, okay.
But once you have that thing set up, then you can go in there and he can actually set it up where I've got a series for sellers. And it actually goes out to the sellers every week or every few days and tells them what you're doing. It also talks about price. And, eventually it kind of plugs at them until they eventually drop their price or they go away. And that way they also feel like you're doing something. This is a big, very important part of this process.
Yeah, I did get the voice mailbox. which I can check through the internet or by phone for phone numbers people have called in. I'm not yet to the point where I can screen that out very well. It's just the one mailbox that I have to check on it manually.
Is it a local number or an 800 number?
It's a local.
Okay, good. On your signs, it should be a local number. If are you getting a lot of calls and you just can't get them transposed?
At this point, we're only getting about 5 to 8 calls a day.
Okay.
So it's okay. We can transpose those.
Okay.
I want to get it where, you know, I'm getting 15 or 20, and that'll get more of a burden.
Yeah. Well, with that many calls a day, you should be able to talk to quite a few of those people.
Yeah.
And get them qualified. And when you run out of time, then you can get somebody else to do it for you. But the more people you talk to personally, you're going to be able to make that happen. Now, are you using the script that I gave you for voicemail?
Yes. Okay. Adapted slightly, but yes.
Okay. And for everybody else that doesn't have that script basically tells them what a lease option is, how it works, and then it says we've got 3 different lists of lease option properties, one that requires $2,000 down, one that requires $5,000 down, and one that requires $10,000 down. Please tell me your name, your full information, and which list that you want. And we don't have 3 different lists. What we have is one list, but we want to know how much they've got for a down payment.
Right.
So, first of all, tell...
I haven't implemented that, so I'm glad you reminded me of that.
Yeah, that'll get rid of all the people that have no money.
Oh,
or yeah, not everybody. Not everybody, but it'll get rid of a lot of people that have no money. Because at least they know up front that it's required that they have a down payment.
Okay.
And
I did go in and talk to a banker at Chase Bank just up the road from me, looking toward setting somebody up that can help me with pre-qualifying. Can you tell me just what you do with pre-qualifying folks?
On how to pre-qualify?
Yeah, you actually have a loan person, a mortgage or bank, give you some kind of a pre-qual estimate or letter or something on any of these folks?
You can do that. It depends on what you're trying to do ultimately. And sometimes when you put people, like if I put somebody who's a lease option into my property and I want to know if that person is going to actually qualify for the property, then I'd like them to talk to a lender to find out when they're going to qualify. Because the reason they're buying lease option now is because they don't qualify. Because their credit or their income or some reason. So I want to know, is it realistic that they can qualify in a year? But a lot of times I don't really care whether they qualify or not. So I don't worry about it. Now, if you want to find out, it's sometimes nice to have a lender who will do that pre-qualifying for you. But a lot of times you're going to bang your head against the wall trying to find a lender who will work with you and who will actually follow through with this. Because 9 out of 10 of the people they talk to will not qualify.
Right.
So they're going to get frustrated and they're going to give up on you. There are some smart mortgage guys out there, and right now there's a lot of hungry mortgage guys out there that may be willing to do it. When times are good, those mortgage company guys aren't as excited about doing this.
Yeah.
But when times are tough like they are now for mortgage people, they're going to be more interested in doing it. But fewer of the people that they've got will qualify. So it's kind of 6 of 1, 1/2 dozen the other. I
don't know which of your guys, maybe it was Jim Drail, maybe one of them had said something about qualifying a lot of people, pre-qualifying through a lender. So I kind of jumped on that. But I'm hearing you say, well, don't worry about it too much. Just if you feel you really want to.
I think it's something you can add later.
Okay.
Right now, your main goal is to make some money.
I got to get some money coming in.
Yeah. You got to get the cash flow happening. You got to get some deals done. And then you can expand it to start working with mortgage guys later. And I'm not saying don't do it. Because, I mean, Bob's got some great things that he's doing with mortgage guys right now. Bob, you still on the line?
Yeah, I am, yeah. My mortgage guys become indispensable.
Yeah.
I've gone through a dozen of them that weren't worth anything, but I finally hit the jackpot with this guy.
And that's an important point there. You went through a dozen of them or more, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Before he found one that he could actually work with. So go ahead and tell him.
Well, yeah, I mean, with him, because occasionally we're getting people qualified right away and we're selling the properties. And so, you know, to the person who was asking the question, I don't want to necessarily focus on them going through the qualification process, pulling credit, and finding out that they would qualify for a mortgage at some point today. I'd rather treat that as a separate decision after they focus on a house that they like. And so I really focus on getting them into a house and making a decision on a house. If they don't do that, nothing else matters. That's after you find out they have some money to give you up front. And so separately, if there's any concerns on their part that their credit is not good enough, they can't, you know, support the house, you know, then I'll have them talk with my mortgage broker. But I work closely enough with him that I do a at a 30,000 foot level a qualification that I know whether they'll qualify or not, pretty much. And so I just have that conversation with them, and he's just there to add support, you know, if needed. So I use him judiciously, but he's right in sync with me, so he speaks the same language as I do to these folks, and we reinforce one another.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, then perhaps more important to me, Joe, would be knowing the next step when we do these lease options and assignments. Is there anywhere in there I need to be working with the title company at that point?
If you're doing a lease option, you probably don't need to do title work. Now, one of the things that you're going to do is you're going to have a disclosure. So since you're in and out of these deals, you're not closing the deal. If you were buying a subject to, and then you were going to lease option it out to someone, that's a different story. Then you probably want to go to a title company and get a preliminary title report. You're not going to get title insurance. You're just going to get a preliminary title insurance.
So you're saying if I'm going to assign it, don't worry about it. But if I'm going to lease option it myself and then...
Correct. So if you're assigning it, what you're going to do is instead you're going to have them sign a disclosure saying you didn't check it and that they've checked their own and that they're responsible for checking it. And that's what that disclosure form that I've got is all about. It's the same with inspections. If you're selling, if you're flipping it, you're going to make them responsible for the inspections. You're going to make them responsible for the title, and you're going to make them responsible for the appraisal to make sure that they're comfortable with those things and that they know that you didn't check those things personally. That way you don't have to do all that work. Let them do the work and then just sign off on it.
Okay. Great advice. Thanks.
All right, good.
And just a comment on the numbers of signs I've got out with the three houses. I probably had a max of not more than 8 signs out. I find it kind of hard to figure out where to put the signs where they don't disappear overnight.
Yeah.
Even just having 8 signs out, I'm still getting sometimes 4, sometimes 5 or 8, or as many as 8 calls a day. So what do you generally look for? I know one of your tapes, the guy said, put out 12 signs every time you get a new house. And I think that's a good idea.
Absolutely.
What about other signs you're putting out when you don't really have a house, but it's a generic sign, like you were saying about rent to own, no fall?
We'll put them in areas where you think you're going to get deals or where you think it's going to be most likely for you to sell. And that's going to be in median price range areas for your area.
Sure.
So
I guess it wouldn't hurt to have 20 or 30 of those out, would it?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. I mean, we will put out, I'm working with some people here, and we put out about 50 to 100 every week. Just in a couple of different areas where we're working. But we usually have properties that we're trying to fill in those areas.
Okay. Well, I think that ends my questions, Joe. Thank you.
Okay, you bet. There's somebody with a crowd of people in the room. If they could press *6, it'll mute them out. It'll mute you out. All right, who else has a question?
Hi, Joe. This is Michael from Mississippi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah. My question is, armed with the knowledge that you have today, if you were to get started today as a real estate investor, would you continue doing the same, use the system you're currently using, or would you go about doing something different?
Well, I do things that are a little bit differently than what I teach, simply because I've got substantially more resources to work with, to start with, plus I have an infrastructure already set up. So you've got to start from somewhere. Now, one of the things that I've been doing, and you guys have probably all seen my the passive investing stuff, where we're going to builders, we're buying them in bulk, and then we're turning around selling them to investors at a discount and helping them get into properties, and then we're taking a small cut off of each deal that we do. So that's one of the things I do, and I've got no money into that. I've got no credit into that. I'm doing them with it using an option, working with the builder, and then we're putting together these deals. So I'm essentially doing the same things that I'm teaching, except I'm doing it on steroids. So we're doing a lot more deals because of the way I'm doing it and because I've got such a big list. But I've built my infrastructure, and when I say resources, the main thing I'm talking about is my list. And so you want to start building this list. You know, I've got 40,000 people on my list, it takes a while to build a list like that. But even once you get a few hundred on there, you can start making some substantial money. I think that if you had a list of 10,000 people, you should be able to make $1 million a year on that. So in cash, on a list like that, if you monetize it properly. So building a list is a really important part of it. But if you don't know how to put together deals in the first place, you got to learn that first. So you kind of take this a step at a time on how you grow your business. And when I have people that come into my through my mentor program, what I do first is the first thing that they need to learn how to do is how to talk to a seller and how to structure the deals that the sellers have to sell. Whether it's we're talking to for sale by owners, or we're talking to the landlords, whether we're talking to expired listings, whether we're talking to people that call in on our advertising that we do, whether they call in on the signs that we're doing, or the classifieds, or the online advertising that we do. However they're coming to us, we need to know how to take the deals that they've got and structure them in a way that benefits them, that solves their problem, that is first thinking about how can I solve these people's problem. Once we understand how to do that, then we've got to learn how to show them, okay, here's the offer that I've got, here's the pain you're in, here's the solution to that pain, here's what I can do for you. Does this make sense for you? When you learn how to do that, everybody's going to say yes, because you're going to give them a real solution. Plus, you're going to be thinking about their situation and how to solve their problem, and they're going to know it. You're not just thinking about yourself and how you can rip them off. So they're going to know it, because people have an instinct about those things, and they're going to trust you on a higher level, and then they're going to do the deal with you. Then after that, once you learn how to put together the deal, and you only have to do this once. You know, when you learn how to do it once, you're going to be able to do it. It's much easier the second time, third time, fifth time, hundredth time. It's much, much easier. I was talking to one of the students this morning, and he said he just did his first deal. He just made $5,000. He's 23 years old. He's very, very excited about it, and I was very excited for him. But he had, I said, well, how many sellers did you have to talk to get this first deal done? And he's actually got three sellers that he's working with right now. The first one is done. The other two are getting ready to close. So, and I said, how many did it take to get the first deal, or to get these three deals? He said it took 75 calls. He had to talk 75 sellers to get those three deals together. And I said, well, okay, how long did it take you to get, how many did it take to get the first deal? And it took him 70 to get the first deal, and it took him 5 to get the two after that. So he learned. It took him 70 calls to learn how to do it, how to make the offer, how to get them to say yes. But it took him 5 to get 2 more deals because he learned how to do it. So that's where you want to get. You want to learn how to talk to these sellers first. That's the very first thing that I focus on for everybody. The second thing is you got to learn how to make money on the deal. And to make money, you got to find a buyer for it. So you're not going to close these deals until you have a buyer. That's why you don't have any risk. That's why you don't have any money to these deals, because you don't have to close them until you have somebody who's going to buy them. So at closing, you're making money. It's not like buying a rehab and fixing it up and then hoping you can find a buyer for it later. You already have a buyer when you close the deal, so you don't have to take that risk. You don't have to put any of your own money into it. So the next thing is to find this buyer. You find the buyer, and using these techniques that we were just talking about, just Barry was talking about, putting the signs out, doing all that stuff, you put that stuff out there, and you get people to call you, and you put these deals together. And that's the second thing you learn. Now, once you know how to find a buyer and a seller, you know you can do that over and over and over again, and it's much easier to do every time you do it. It gets easier until there's a point where it's just it's an automatic thing, and you're never going to have a problem. You're never going to worry about whether or not you can make that happen. You know, Bob has talked to thousands and thousands of sellers now. But after Bob, how long did it take you before you got comfortable talking to sellers? How many did you have to talk to?
Oh golly, I don't know. It seemed like it took years. I don't know. You know, I think what really did it for me is that summer we spent in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And me and Dave were there over in Nenaville, and we just called people from all over the country for however long we were there. And after that, I never had an issue talking to anybody. So
yeah. And
for everybody, I suppose that number is different, but yeah, it's certainly thousands and thousands at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, but my guess is that less than 100 people, you're going to be able to put a deal together and make money.
Oh yeah.
And maybe 20 people, maybe 30. Yeah. Depends on. Bob brought some skill to this because he was in sales before that.
That's true. Yeah.
So he brought some already, being able to talk and communicate persuasively, and that's a real benefit. But I've seen people that are teachers, because they're good communicators too, and they can be persuasive. And I've had, you know, like these ladies that have been teachers, elementary school teachers all their lives, and they're having a hard time talking to sellers. I say, well, talk to them like you talk to your kindergartners. You know, treat them like your kindergartners. What would you say to your kindergartner to solve their problem? And it changes everything when they take a different perspective. So they learn how to talk to these people.
Yeah, I think my issue, Joe, is I had that paralysis by analysis where I read through your materials 2 or 3 times before I ever got on the phone. And actually, once I got on the phone, like I said, then it was very fast track to actually, you know, getting it done. So
yeah.
You know, can study his material till you're blue in the face, and until you talk to somebody, it doesn't really come together.
Well, I think I learned from watching you guys go through the process, because that I changed what I do, and the way I teach now is the first week you're on the phone.
Yeah, that's
the first day you're on the phone, because that's really all that matters.
That's true.
And you know, and we keep refining that. The last seminars, you know, that we did, the last buying event that we did, my comment to everybody was, you can't get off the phone until you get five no's. So I gave them a script so that they could get five no's, and that's the only goal, is to get five no's. Or if they say yes, I suppose that's good too. but everybody walked away with deals there. Everybody walked away with yeses, at least. And you know, there's still more of the process. You got to get them to sign the contract, and then you got to go out and find a buyer, and you got to get the buyer to give you the money and move into the house. But that's not really that difficult to do. So that's the process. Did I answer the question, or did I go off on a wild tangent?
Doesn't matter. It was good material.
Thanks.
What's Bob's last name?
Bowman.
Bowman.
Oh, Bob Bowman. Okay, Bob. Thanks.
Yeah, hi.
You see him all over my websites telling you how wonderful I am.
I have a question, Joe.
Yes.
Hi, this is James in Rialto, California.
Hey, James. How you doing?
All righty. I've had a couple of guys, what they wanted to do as far as selling their properties and as far and setting their prices. And they wanted to set their price, you know, a year and a half to 2 years from now as to when the market goes back up. As you know, it's down now. Is that kind of cheating, basically? Because if you bring a buyer in, and if he go in, talk to his realtor friends or run his own comps or something, you know, they would come in and feel like they're kind of being cheated, don't you think? Or
there's,
no?
There's only one thing that will keep a property from selling, and that's the price. Nothing else matters. The price is everything. It doesn't matter if it smells like a dog. It doesn't matter if it's in a war zone. It doesn't. None of that stuff matters if the price is right. So the price. I'm not saying low. It just has to be right. So if it's not selling, ultimately it's the price problem. So they got to deal with the price. So does it make sense for you to take a property that's overpriced? It might, because you can put a sign in the yard and you can start building your buyers list.
Right.
You know, even if it's overpriced, and you might eventually talk that person into lowering his price. And there's going to be some that you don't even know yet, because especially if you're new, you know for sure, maybe that's not overpriced, maybe it is overpriced, I don't know. So you go ahead and take it, and you start getting feedback from your buyers. And whenever you have somebody says, man, you are way overpriced on that property, what's the deal? You go back to your seller and say, this is what they're saying to me. You know, this is where we're at. They don't think the value is going to go up then. They don't think it's even going to appraise at that time. So, you know, do you want to sell it, you know, or not? And you work with them to try to convince them to do it. So, like, I don't mind keeping it on the market, but I see you're bleeding every month because you got this monthly payment going out, and I know I can get it somebody in there, but you got to be realistic on your price as well. But the other thing to remember too is on lease rent to buy properties, on lease to own, the thing that people are most sensitive about is the monthly payment rather than the regular payment. And typically, you can get 5 to 10% more for a property that you sell on terms, lease to own. So that's usually not a problem. But if
you don't want to go too far out of the range of the neighborhood, though, right?
Exactly. It's got to stay within, I think it needs to stay within comps. Now, I sell a lot of properties of my own, lease to own. When I do it, I do a 3-year rent to buy contract, and it goes up 5% every year. And I write it that way. And I also make the rent go up 5% every year. Now, is it likely that they're going to pay me 15% more in 3 years? You know, I don't know. I don't know that's likely. It's possible, but I may have to negotiate at that time. But it makes me the good guy at that point if I drop my price.
Okay.
If the values haven't gone up, and if the values have gone up, then I don't get screwed. So it's
the reason why I had asked that was because let's say this one area basically was calling for around $1,600 per month, but because he was in a negative cash flow, he bumped it up to a little over $2,000 per month so that he wouldn't be in a negative.
Okay.
Is that kind of a bigger draw than it should go up, or
well, what would it actually rent for? It should be $1,600, but he wants $2,000.
Yes, just okay. So he can get out of his negative cash flow.
Okay, but he's paying $2,000 a month right now negative, right?
Yes.
So if he was to get $1,600, his negative would only be $400 a month.
Right.
So which makes more sense?
For who? For me or for him?
For him.
Well, it makes more sense for him if he charged $2,000.
What if he can't get $2,000? If market rent's $1,600, that's all he can get.
Right. Then he's got to bring it back down after a while.
Right. So there's a couple of options here. One is you can change the way you market it. If you go to it and say, here's, I've got this property, it's $2,000 a month. This is what it would cost you if you bought the property. It cost you $2,000 a month. And you may be able to convince a buyer to buy it. And I've done that quite a few times, by the way, where they'll accept the higher payment because that's what the payment would be. And you just say, you're not renting here, you're buying. If you were renting it, it would be $1,600. But he's not renting it, he's selling it. So if you want to buy it, you have to pay more to buy a property than you would in this other situation because they rent for less than what the payment is.
Well, he did sweeten the pile a bit in terms of you got that extra $400 would actually come off if they take the option at the end of the option.
So that gives you
the price of the deal.
So I would try it that way and see if you can sell it. At the same time, talk to him about the potential that you may have to drop the price later. And that you don't want him to bleed too long. You don't want that payment negative to be hitting him too hard. It's $2,000 a month. Because, $400 a month is a lot better. It's $4,800 a year rather than $24,000. It's a big difference. And, it's going to be a lot better for him because the market's going to turn around eventually.
Right.
And the value is going to shoot back up again. And even if this person doesn't buy, at least he's going to be back in the game. And it's not going to cost him that much. And certainly he doesn't want to just keep it vacant. Just to save $400 a month.
Exactly.
It won't take too many months before he realizes that. He may not understand it right away, but over a period of time, he will understand it.
Right.
And
alrighty then.
And maybe you'll get it sold before then, and that'll make him even happier.
Exactly. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Good luck with it. Who else?
Joe.
Yes. Who's that?
Jerry, Arizona.
Okay.
Has run into something this week that I couldn't get answered. I was at my credit union, and while I was there, I got referred to their mortgage representative, and my questions that I had was regarding the package that would be available to rehabbers, and like if I was doing a rehab and if I could use an actual conventional lender to acquire the funds I needed to do the rehab versus going and trying to get hard money and possibly getting that money through a conventional lender at a lesser rate than what you would spend for hard money. And my question for you then was do you know anybody, or have you had experience with a conventional lender that has made that available?
Yeah, there's a couple of government programs that have something similar to that. So go talk to an FHA guy.
FHA guy?
Yeah. But let me also say that do you really want to do rehabs?
Well, actually, no, but I have a friend of mine who's just getting into the business, and I was kind of hoping to open some doors for him.
Right. I think that rehabs are a huge amount of work, a lot of risk. You got to take unless you really know what you're doing. And there's some guys that do, and they make money, but it's also a pain in the butt. It's very work intensive. You have to really pay attention, even if you're not doing the work and hiring somebody to do it for you, which sometimes is even more of a pain in the butt. There's so much risk involved. All the stuff that I'm teaching doesn't require any money down, doesn't require any loans, doesn't require any money to fix it up. One of the things, I used to do rehabs, and one of the things, and I've had a lot of students that have come through my program that did rehabs. Some of them still do rehabs, and they make money at it, and it can be a good business, but they also have a lot of resources to work with as well. But one of the things I found one time, I had a property that was just a real stinker. It was in bad condition, and I wanted to sell it, but I didn't want to do the work to it. I was doing the rehab on it, or I was having it done, and I thought, well, let me put it on the market at full price, what the price is going to be after the rehab's done, and we'll just start working on it. So I had my guy in there, he was cleaning away, and I had the sign in the yard, and somebody came along and they bought it as a fixer-upper at full price.
Really?
And I thought, well, this is interesting. I sold this property without fixing it up at full price, and I didn't have to even pay for all the materials. So I started doing that with lease options. And now what we can do is, if we have a property that's a fixer-upper, we put on there rent to buy, you know, handyman special. And then when people come, say, before you can move in, you have to make it habitable. Now, I don't make them change the carpet and paint it, but if the furnace is bad, I make them put a furnace in before they can move in. If the roof leaks, I make them fix the roof before they can move in with their money. They spend the money, they fix it up, and then they can go in and they can do the rehab. I sell it to them for full market value after rehab. On a lease option. So they come in, instead of me getting a lease option fee, my lease option fee is dramatically reduced because it goes towards paying for a furnace or goes towards fixing the roof or whatever.
Right.
But I own the property, bought it subject to or whatever. So they're rehabbing my house, they're bringing the value up. If they do buy it, they're going to pay full price for it. If they don't buy it, then it'll be in better condition for the next person that I sell it to.
Very good.
So you stop screwing around with all this hammering and nailing stuff, and you don't even have to mess with that anymore. I think the whole thing is about selling properties like this is setting people's expectations. So when they call on the phone, you tell them, let's say the property smells like a dog. It's not in bad condition, but it smells like a dog. And it's got old paint, and you know, just is everybody's not liking it. What I recommend is that you tell them, this place stinks. It's really, and the paint is horrible, and it's just like disgusting. And you know, if you can't look past this stuff, don't even bother to go look at it. But it's not a bad house. I mean, it's pretty good structurally, but boy, it really is a mess. So when they go over there, they're expecting something horrible. And when they get there, instead of them saying this is horrible, which if you told them it was good, they're going to say it's horrible. But if you told them it was bad, they're going to say, hey, this isn't as bad as you told me. This isn't so bad. I can fix this. I can do something. We put new carpet in. I can paint. I can do this and that. But they already were expecting it to be bad. So now you set their expectations. Now it's so much better than what they thought. And it really helps you to move that property. Always go beyond, you know, with so that their expectations are set properly.
Good idea.
All right. Good luck with it.
Thanks.
Who else has questions?
Hey, Joe. Nathan White from Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, what was the first name?
Nathan.
So you broke up.
Nathan, Nathan.
Okay, what can I do for you?
How you doing? I just got your push-button method program about a week ago. I've been listening and reading as fast as I can, and I just heard you say a little while ago that Rick can put up all of the sites for me, and you host them on your server?
Correct.
Is that... I thought you said $79 a month. Does that include hosting for all of the sites?
It's $500 for him to set them up. That's all the sites.
Okay.
And the autoresponder. And mine is $79 a month.
Okay.
So that includes all that stuff. So he can set it up for you. Now you can have somebody else. You could go to rentacoder.com and find somebody to set up stuff for you.
I just assume get Rick's contact information from you, get to him and get it going, because my goal is to get going as fast as I possibly can. One of the reasons I bought the push-button method, I have limited time, and I want to set this up as soon as I can, because quite frankly, it's one of the greatest marketing plans I've ever looked at.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been amazing for what it's been able to do for us, and we keep tweaking it and messing with it, but it's a good program. I include it in that push button method as sort of as a free bonus thing, and I look around at what other people are selling these things for. I mean, I don't know if you've been looking around, but it's $5,000-$10,000 to buy a website like this without any of this information.
It's wild.
And they're not very very good. I'm impressed with our site.
Well, you should be. Does one of the sites ask buyers those qualifying questions, or is that something I need to physically ask them when they call in?
It tells them what they need. You know, it tells them there's a recording, and it tells them what they need to be able to qualify. Because there's not very many qualifying questions. The only one is, do you have any money?
Right.
You know, and how much have you got?
Right.
How much can you afford a month? That's the main qualifying. Because if they, as long as they can make the payments and they've got enough money for the lease option fee, that's what matters as far as lease options go.
Okay. Now, do you have, so I can request Rick's contact information from you, do you have several email addresses, or you just have that just one that I should send it to?
Just one guy.
Okay, just an email to?
Send it to joecrump@joecrump.com.
Make sure you put on there that you have
the push button method, so I don't have to look it up, because that's just for people that have the push button method.
Okay.
Or my mentor students.
Okay. You mentioned that. Well, I read your sales disclosure form that you were talking about earlier. I noticed you have your personal name on that form, you know, as a sample. Can I use my my corporate name there instead of my personal name? And the reason I asked that question is so I'm kind of concerned about avoiding dealer status, you know, like being an option dealer per se. Does it matter if I have my corporate name there, or do I need to use my personal name?
On which part? On the contract?
Yeah, the sales disclosure form.
Oh, yeah, use your business name. Use your business name.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. That's why you set up a business, and those things make sense. But one of the things that I'm always sensitive to is that, you know, I've got people that are new. They come to me and say, well, before I get started, what should I do? Should I set up an LLC? Should I set up a corporation?
No, just get started. I mean,
you've already got that, so go ahead and use it. But don't waste your time screwing around with all that stuff. Just do it as a Schedule C, and you'll be fine. But there is some protection, and there are some tax benefits to having an LLC, which you'll eventually want to do.
I got you. Do you put your leads into different Excel databases? For instance, I've seen, you know, there are some low-end properties here where I can, you know, talk to sellers and get to put a sign up eventually, and then higher-end properties. Do you just have them, you know, all of your properties in one database?
Are you talking about so that people can go to the website and look at them?
Once you have the leads, okay?
The leads, the buyers.
Yes, once you have the buyers.
I put them all in the same database. It wouldn't be that hard to separate them. But I like everybody to just, whenever I send out a blast, I want to send it out just to everybody. Bob, what are you doing on that? You got a bunch of leads. Are you still on the line?
What do I use for?
I'm here. I'm sorry. I just muted you for a second because I had a call coming.
I use Zact as a contact manager.
No, what are you doing? Are you separating your leads by how much they can afford? So that when you do a blast out to them, do different groups get different amounts?
No. I have my buyers in A and B are my categories, and then the C category never makes my database. So my A category is a combination of they have cash, they have urgency, and they have decent credit, and the Bs are maybe they'll develop. So that's the only differentiation I have. And then again, the third category I never bother to put in my database, because they're never going to get with the program. But when I send out emails through my autoresponder or blast when I have new properties, I send them to one and all equally.
Yeah. I think that makes sense, because they might know somebody. Even if it's not for them, they might know. And I would also disagree with you on throwing out the C leads. I'd keep those in the database, and you know, it doesn't cost you anything to keep them in there. And when you do a blast, it goes to them, and their situation may change.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, these are dregs of the earth, C leads.
Bottom feeder. As I build my list, I'm sorry. As I build my list, I have a neighbor who's an agent about to become a broker. Do you recommend, you know, as my list gets larger, I know I can use it to make money in other ways. Do you recommend certain flat fees or percentages that I should attempt to charge brokers, agents, etc.? And if so, how much? Or do you go by, you know, case by case basis?
To charge a broker?
Yeah. Yes.
The fee to charge a broker, or the fee that you'll pay them.
A fee to charge them, you know, for access to my list, so to speak.
Oh, to your buyer's list?
Yes.
Okay, so if you bring them a buyer that actually buys through them.
Correct.
Now, do you have a license?
No, I do not.
Okay, if you have a license, you can get a referral fee.
Okay.
Typically 25 to 50%, depending on how many you're selling them. 25 is normal in the industry these days.
Okay.
So that would be standard. And 50%, if you're giving them a bunch of leads, I think is also fair. And now, they're not allowed to give referral fees unless you have a license.
Okay.
But there are other ways around that process. They can pay marketing fees. Real estate agents constantly pay for leads. Same with mortgage people. They constantly pay for leads. But they're not allowed to pay referral fees. So they got to figure out what I do is say, how do you want to pay me? Here's how much I need. How do you want to pay me? You know, make it work with your broker and let them decide. And then they may say, oh, no, that's illegal. I can't do that. I said, well, I'll go find somebody that can.
Okay. Because
there's plenty of people out there that can do it, that can figure out a way to do it legally and honestly and ethically and all that stuff, because you're bringing them leads.
Well, no, I'm basically going to tell them, go up the road to the competitor and see how much they want to pay me.
Well, I think that, you know, to be able to, if you're giving them a bunch of stuff, 50% is probably fair, 25% otherwise. You know, Bob's doing some, you want to tell them about what you're doing now, Bob, with working with realtors?
Well, with realtors?
Yeah, with the way you're ready to go, buyers and all that stuff, where they're finding.
Yeah, basically, what I have is an inventory of, 40, 50 houses at any given time, and I just don't add more houses just because it's so cumbersome. You know, as Joe said, it's very easy to, you get 100 houses on your website. It's just the management of that whole, keeping everything up to date is very time consuming. So I do have some inventory, but what I do now is kind of, I've gone to a just-in-time inventory. And what we do is when we get somebody who fits all the criteria, that they have some money, they have some urgency, they have decent credit, and they need to move into a house soon, if they cannot be accommodated through my website and what I have there, I work with realtors to find the property through MLS, through websites, through classifieds, and they work with the buyers to basically find a house for them. So that way, my inventory now is expanded by hundreds of properties that are out there available, as you can pull from the MLS, anything that's for rent or would consider a lease option. And I don't have to have every house in the universe for every person's situation that way. And I found it to be much easier process. And I outsource all the, you know, work that's necessary to find the houses, talk to the seller, talk to the buyers, show houses. All that I don't do, in the process. So
tell us how the money is made, what percentages and all that.
For this particular family that I'm working with, I split the money with them. So we're also doing some other things, so it's somewhat unique. So these are more than realtors. These have become business partners to me. So I split the money with them.
So somebody comes in with a lease option fee, let's say $10,000,
right?
Because he's working in a fairly high-end market,
right?
And the agent will go out, find them a property either through the MLS or through another source,
right?
That they like, and he'll take five of that. Bob will take five of that,
right?
And if they're working through the MLS, there's usually a small fee in the MLS that's a co-op fee to the other agent.
Well, right. Actually, what we're doing is we'll expand the monies to be made because, while I split the money they're making, they're also splitting the money that they're making on the with the realtor's license as a marketing fee or however they would, you know, determine or however they would phrase that.
Right.
So yeah, usually we're increasing the size of the pie and then we're splitting that.
And then there's also the potential that if this person actually exercises the option, and Bob's trying to find people that can exercise it within 3 to 6 months. If they actually exercise the option, he can get a percentage of the real estate commission on that as well through his real estate agent, who gets a co-op fee.
And that, again, is just more money that we all make.
Right.
But the nicest thing about it is that, I mean, this is just turnkey handoff, and I'm not involved with it. It's a very unique situation. They're very trusted partners, and I teach them everything I know, and they go do it while I'm doing other things. So if I can't get a quick and dirty, you know, deal done on myself by myself, I love just passing it that way because it's taken care of and I don't have to worry about it.
So if you've got somebody that you really trust, an agent that you really trust, this would be a good situation to do. It's just an awesome program because they're doing all the work. Now, if you have somebody maybe that you don't know as well, or if you're just starting a relationship with them, then you might want to keep control over part of the process. And I would suggest keeping control over finding the buyers and getting them qualified. And then once they're ready to go, then passing them off to the agent who processes them and gets them the property. But that way, the agent can't go around you and keep from working with you. Bob's working with people that he trusts,
right.
And he wants to go in that direction. But you probably want to keep some control, or you'd have somebody else ultimately maybe handling that part where they're talking to the buyers, getting the buyers qualified, getting them all ready to go, and then passing them off. So ultimately, you could automate all this stuff where you don't have to do any showing the properties. You never have to talk to a seller. You never have to do any negotiation. You never have to talk to the buyers. You just manage the process.
Well, that's exactly how it works. Yeah. And the best part about it is this is realtors talking to realtors, which legitimizes me in this process.
Right.
In fact, we just had an attorney review our contracts and legitimize those. And we're using FARBAR versions, the Florida Association of Realtors, brokers paperwork. And so not only are we talking to other realtors, but as we are pulling 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 houses that fit the criteria, if this buyer does not want any of the houses, those houses also become part of the inventory that we have. And these realtors are sending my lease option memo agreement with some realtor verbiage on the bottom, and realtors are submitting that to their sellers and sending it back to me. And so my inventory is increased by this process that I put on the website. But again, I haven't done anything. The realtors will take the pictures. The realtors will show the properties. I get all the description right off the MLS, just cut and paste it onto my website. And so it's an easy way to get properties through realtors. So.
And realtors are really hungry right now. This is the worst time in the for years for realtors. So they're dropping like flies right now.
Oh, yeah. So. Joe, as I hook up, lease option buyers, I'm talking about on the for rent method, the rent-to-own method. As I connect these buyers with these sellers, should I be, when I speak to sellers, should I be finding out if they have, someone mentioned adjustable rate mortgages earlier, that type of thing, so I don't, excuse me, set up a buyer for failure, so to speak, down the line? Or is that pretty much, buyer beware type of thing? Once I hook them up together, they need to discuss that with the seller.
Well, is this a lease option buyer that you're putting together?
Yes, lease option buyer.
If it's a lease option, then it's really the seller's problem. It's not going to be an issue for the buyer. At least it usually won't be an issue for the buyer, because they know if they have an adjustable rate mortgage, so they know how much they're going to rent it for. If they get X amount of dollars for it, and they have the break even right now, but if their interest rate goes up, they're going to have $200 a month negative. They know that going in, so they're going to take responsibility for that, and the price still stays the same. So
okay.
And it's, remember, it's only a 1 year lease option, so it's not going to be a huge,
right.
There's not going to be huge changes on this thing. If it's a 2 year or 3 year lease option, then they need to, you might want to mention it to the seller and say, you're comfortable, you have an adjustable rate mortgage, make sure you're not going to get into a situation where you're going to have a substantially higher payment, down the line. And if you do, is it something you can handle and make sure you can continue to make the payments on it?
Right. And like what you said earlier about pre-qualifying through lenders and so forth, that you'd probably hold off on that, should we not tell sellers up front that we're going to qualify people, for their property, or should we go ahead, especially in this situation where I have the websites where it's kind of qualifying them anyway?
Well, there's two different ways you can do this. There's always lots of ways you can do this, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. If you take somebody like Bob, he's trying to get them pre-qualified as much as possible, trying to get people that actually qualify for mortgages in a very short period of time, and so that they can close the deals, and it makes it easier for them to move those. On the other hand, you've got somebody like Nina, who's taking the property. She'll take them subject to, and then she'll rent them out, and it doesn't really matter to her whether or not they can qualify. So if they don't qualify in a year, she'll just extend their lease option because
okay.
It's her property and she doesn't mind keeping them because she makes more money the longer she keeps them. So it depends on what your end, end purpose is going to be.
Okay. Right now, quite honestly, I need to get as many quick deals done as fast as I possibly can.
I'd use that for rent method. You said you had the push button method?
Yes.
Okay, so you get into that push button or that for rent method. Do that, and that'll get you started. Start making those offers. You can make those offers tomorrow.
Okay, and don't worry so much about qualifying the buyers through a lender or something.
No. I would focus, and now your seller may want you to qualify them, and
okay.
then you get them with a lender, and And you may learn, if on the push button method, there's even a CD on there that tells you how to qualify.
Right, how to qualify them. Yeah.
So you can listen to that, and that way you'll understand and talk to your lender, because some of these qualification things change, and there's been a lot of uproar in the process over the last 6 months or so. July, everything changed on this stuff. So you might want to learn how to do it, but you can also have somebody else do it for you.
Beautiful, Joe. Thanks a lot. One last quick question before I go. What's the name of the author of that book you were talking about, 4-Hour Workweek?
What's the what?
The name of the author of the book you were talking about, 4-Hour Workweek?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Type it into Google, though, you'll find it.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, Joe. You'll be hearing from me soon with an email.
All right. Good.
Bye-bye now.
Who else has questions? And if you press star 6 to mute yourself out, you have to press star 6 again to get back in. Any other questions?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Good.
My name's Jay, and I'm in California.
How you doing?
In the push button method, you're talking about earnest money that they need in California.
Uh-huh.
Earnest money that you need in California.
Right.
And I was wondering, how does that work? Do you put that, like, say you want to do a $1 earnest money thing, do you just put that on the purchase agreement at the bottom?
Just put it in where the earnest money is asked for earnest money.
Okay, so it says it right there?
There's a place for earnest money, and on all the others, it says not applicable. And frankly, if I was in California, I probably wouldn't give any earnest money, even though it's a requirement there. I probably still wouldn't do it because I don't think the contracts are worth anything if the other person doesn't agree. So when you go through this process, if you're trying to get a rock solid contracts, well then go get an attorney and get rock solid contracts. These contracts are good rock solid contracts, but you don't really want to mess with enforcing contracts. What you want to do is keep a relationship with the person that you're working with so that they want to use it. If you try to get to a position where you're going to screw somebody and then you want to enforce the contract and you know they know they've been screwed and they don't want to do it, it's going to be a lot harder and you have to fight them, and that's not the way to have business. So what you want to do is make sure that it makes sense for them and then follow through with the process. Does that mean that some people won't try to stab you in the back even though you've got an agreement? Yeah, it's true, but it's very hard to get a judge to rule in your favor, to force somebody to sell their property or to buy a property, you know, even if you do a less pendants, even if you have the contract in place, it's going to cost you more money than it's worth. So I probably wouldn't even use earnest money. If you want to use earnest money, then make it a dollar or whatever and do it that way.
And then do I pay them that dollar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just give it
to them. All right. Another thing, too, if I do the rent-to-own method, let's say the seller's home is $300,000. The first is $125,000, and then you're telling them, "Hey, listen, at the end of your deal, you get the equity." How do the mechanics work on that? How are they? And it's saying the option buy refinances for $300,000 later on. How do they get the equity? How does the seller get the equity out of that?
So they it's worth how much?
$300,000.
And they're buying it for how much?
Yeah, well, they're selling it for $300,000.
But he only owes $125,000.
And he owes $125,000 on it.
So he's got $175,000 of equity that he needs out before the 1 year is up.
And do they kind of make their own contract out of that?
Now, and you've got a lease option deal, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, but you've got a seller who needs his equity out, is what you're saying, right?
Right, uh-huh. Let's say they do the three-year, it's a three-year contract on that.
Okay.
Does that matter?
It doesn't really matter. So the first question I'd ask is, why do you need the money? And if he says, well, I need it because I want to put it down on the next property that I buy, and, you know, he can usually borrow more on the next property he buys. He doesn't have to put that money down because he's going to get income coming from that equity, which will pretty much offset what it would cost him to borrow that money on another property.
Right.
Okay. So he may not really need the money. But let's say he wants to go out and he wants to, you know, go to Europe and buy a boat, and, you know, he just wants to spend some money, and he needs the cash in order to do that. And or he needs it for some other part of his life, or he's getting a divorce, or, you know, whatever. He's got to have the capital. What he could go out and he could refinance the property and pull most of his capital out that way. So if he owes $300,000 on it, he pulls out, he gets a new loan for $270,000. You know, he pays off his $125,000 and gets the balance of that money in his pocket. And then you can either do a subject to with him, you can do a lease option, whatever he wants to do. He's got his money out of the deal. He still owes that money, but he that'll be paid off when that property is finally sold.
Okay, because I'm referring to that there is a lease option buyer already. You do have one in place. I was just wondering, is that how he gets his equity out after they? Because I'm out of the deal, right? I'm going to get my $10,000, whatever. I'm out of the deal. He wants to know, well, how am I going to get my equity out of this deal now? Okay, now it's not between the buyer and him. And did you answer my question?
Well, if he wants to get the equity out later.
Yeah.
He just waits until the guy buys the property.
Okay.
When the guy buys the property, he's going to get a new loan on it. It's going to pay off his loan, and it's going to pay him the balance of what he's owed.
The buyer will.
The new loan that the buyer gets.
Yeah, right. So the buyer, that's where it comes from there.
Yeah, if the buyer goes out and is going to buy a $300,000 property, he's going to put, you know, we'll say 5% down. He puts his $15,000 down and pays some closing costs, and the loan comes in with $300,000 and pays, pays off the loan. And pays off, you know, pays the seller. So that's where he's getting his money.
Now, all right. So I guess that agreement is in the bank loan in itself. That's taken care. They take care of that.
That's correct. That's all the seller's deal. They have to deal with that because there's a lien against that property. They've got to take care of that. And the buyer has to take care of his loan, getting the loan. So he has to qualify for it. If he's doing a lease option, the reason he's doing a lease option at the beginning is because he doesn't qualify because of his income or because of his credit. So hopefully over that year, he's going to start qualifying and he still wants to buy the property. Then he goes out and get a new loan and he pays off the property as though he were doing a new purchase.
Okay, great. I have another question.
Okay.
Let's say you have a land contract or multiple mortgage and the seller says there's no liens on the property. Now your lease option buyer is like 2 years in the contract, he's been making the monthly payments, and they find out there's a lien. Now, what happens now, and what could have been done to prevent this?
Well, so you bought the property, right?
Uh-huh.
And you bought it on either subject to a multi-mortgage land contract. And what you want to do is do a preliminary title report, have a title company do it for you, so that you know if there's any liens against the property when you buy it.
Okay, is that so? You always do that then, because listening to your program sounds like that you would probably put that on the buyer's responsibility,
not necessarily so. If I'm going to keep the property in my name, or in my company's name, I'm going to do title work on it. If I'm flipping the property to somebody else, I'm going to do a disclosure to tell them that I didn't do it and that they should.
Okay.
Okay.
So if I'm doing a subject to, then I would want to do that title search then.
Correct.
Okay, and you wouldn't have the buyer do that title, put it on the responsibility?
No, if I'm buying the property, I wouldn't, because the likelihood is that the lease option buyer is not going to exercise their option. So if they don't exercise their option, and you find out later there's a problem with it, you're not going to get that money. Or if they do exercise their option, you still have that problem to deal with, and you're not going to make your profit.
I see.
So you just make sure that you're covered. And then the things that you're not covering, you need to make sure that they know that you didn't cover them.
Okay.
So that they do it themselves.
All right.
And you can do this stuff for them. It's not hard. It's a matter of making a phone call and paying $150. Preliminary title. So it's not that difficult to do these things. But, on these flip deals, it doesn't make sense, in my opinion, to spend the time on it.
I see. Tell me something. In the stupid proof system, your hierarchy was subject to land contract and multiple mortgage. And then your push button method, you go subject to multiple mortgage and land contract. What happened there?
It's subject to multiple mortgage, land contract.
In your stupid proof, you didn't switch the other last two?
If I did, it was a mistake.
Okay, all right.
Or maybe I changed my mind on it. It's been a while since I created that program.
Okay, All right, great. Thanks. Love your program.
Thank you very much. The reason we do that hierarchy that way, by the way, is because with subject to, you're taking the deed to the property, so it gives you the most control of that property. With a multi-mortgage, you're also getting the deed, but you're also giving out a second mortgage to the seller so that he has the right to take it back from you if you don't pay him. And then after that, a land contract where you do not get the deed, but you have a recorded interest in the property, so you can be foreclosed upon if you don't make your payments by the seller, but you also have the rights to buy it. But there's also some other issues with land contracts that I'm not going to go into right now, but subject to is best, multi-mortgage is second, land contract is third, and then lease option is the worst way to buy a property because it doesn't give you much control. It's on the other hand, it's better to sell on a lease option, so because it's easier to get rid of somebody if they stop paying you. It's easier to get rid of somebody who's doing a lease option. Usually, you can just evict them. As a possibility, you'd have to foreclose, but most of the time, you just can evict them. Whereas with the subject two, if you own it on subject two, it's much harder to get rid of you. So when you buy subject two. When you sell lease option. When you're doing terms. Who else has a question?
Joe, Barry here again in Arizona. Had another question about, help me out with understanding how to talk to people about how much the assignment fee or option fee is going to be. So far, in my somewhat limited experience, when I'm talking to both buyers and sellers, they're all talking in the range of $2,000-$3,000 for a fee. And when I've mentioned 8 or 9 or 10, they say, oh, wow, that's pretty high. But I don't think it's high. I think, you know, I want to...
Well, what price range? What price range are you in?
Typically, let's see, the three houses I have working on me right now, one would be around 230, and the upper one would be around 320,000.
Yeah, 10,000 is not that unusual for that price of a property.
Okay. You know, I'm kind of figuring, couldn't I say 2-3%?
No,
purchase price?
It doesn't really matter how much you charge. What matters is how much they've got.
Yep, that's true.
So you got to find out how much money they've got first. You don't need to tell them what they want, what you want for it.
Okay.
So you need to ask them when you first talk to them. Say, well, how much have you got for a down payment? And if they say I've got $5,000, you tell them if you had $7,000, I know we can make this work.
Yeah, I heard you discuss that earlier.
Yeah. So focus on how much they've got rather than how much you want. If they've got $1,000, does it still make sense to do the deal? Yeah, probably. So take the $1,000.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I guess in a way I was trying to be a guy to help clean up the market away because I kept hearing, well, people are less than $2,000 down or as little as $2,000 down, never end up buying.
Right.
Why don't I be a little tougher and get a little more committed to help my sellers more? On the other hand, I'm sitting here thinking now, I haven't done a deal. I don't think I want to be the guy that's mopping up the marketplace.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I absolutely. Just make some money. You know, because once you do it, once you make some money, then you're going to make more money next time.
Yeah,
you know?
I will ask them how much they've got.
One of the guys on my call today, he just made $5,000, and he says... my last question after congratulating him because it was his first deal, my next question to him was, now how can you make that $10,000 next time?
Uh-huh.
Or how could you have made on this money, on this deal, how could you have made $10,000 rather than $5,000? And we talked about all these different ways that he could have done that by getting more money from the buyer, getting more money from the seller, making it, looking for a different type of marketing, all these different things to try to increase the amount that you make. But the first thing to do, just make $1,000 if that's all that you can, if that's all they have, take it. You know, I've had people make $500 and, be thrilled that they got the deal done because they knew that it was a milestone. They knew that it was the first step in the process.
Good point.
On the other hand, I've seen people make $20,000 on their first deal too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, since you mentioned sometimes getting money from a seller, when are times to look for that and encourage it?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
For getting money from a seller.
Right.
When are times that you could encourage that or actually look for it?
Well, if I was doing a subject two, I usually ask my subject two sellers to give me the next month payment. So as soon as we get a close, they have to pay the next month payment, whatever that date is. So if I close on the 25th, they pay on the 1st. If I pay a close on the 15th, they pay the next payment, whatever it is. Because interest is paid in arrears. This is my excuse. The interest is paid in arrears. That means that the money has to accrue. So you're always paying the next payment just to pay the previous month,
yeah.
Rather than rent, which is paid in advance. So that what I'm asking them to do is just to pay the interest that's accrued while they've owned the property. And when they do this, it makes your income quite a bit higher. Because now you, and a lot of times the reason I went that direction was because actually one of my students was doing it and he was making it work. So I thought that made a lot of sense. And but I also found that I could, it made sense because I like to close the deals before I find a buyer. If I know it's an area that I want to buy, I'll just go ahead and close it, have them pay the next month rent. I just got 30 days to fill the property, and it doesn't cost me anything. And I kind of like that. But on people that are brand new, I tell them don't even close the deal until you have a buyer. That way you never take any risk on it.
I got a little bit bold on one of my sellers because he's in a bind, and I just knew it's going to take a little bit of advertising here. So my agreement with him up front was, tell you what, now, you know, I'm just getting started. Are you willing to put $500 towards running an ad or something like that? He said, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. That's okay. Great. Yeah. I go for 1,000 next time.
Yes, I will.
No, okay. Serious. I think 1,000 is pretty reasonable. And we've done that with auctions and things like that where we get the seller to pay for it because the advertising is more expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, you really don't have much.
Auctions?
Yeah.
A-U-C-T-I-O-N-S?
What's that?
Did you say for auctions or for options?
Auction, A-U-C.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we do some weird things with auctions. Oh,
that's another subject.
So. Yeah, that's a much more complex process, but... Bob and I have had some fun experiences.
Well, I'm telling you, I have read books and gone through so much on the internet with different gurus, and I just so appreciate the upfront, out in the open kind of approach you have, and all the information you give out. So much of it is free, and I've thoroughly enjoyed what I bought from you as well.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Well, we're past our hour and a half here. Why don't I take, if there's anybody else, I'll take one more question, and then we'll call it a day. Who's got a final question for us?
So it's Julie from Maryland. How are you?
Hey, Julie. How are you?
Good. Mine's more of a structuring question. I have a seller right now who owes $210 on his property, and the value is $227, and he wants to sell his property and wants to go into one of my lease option properties. I guess my question is, should I take his property subject to, or should I just try to do a rent option on his property as well?
How much can you rent it for?
Well, he owes, his monthly payment is $1,915. And for the area, it's doable.
You $1,915 on a $210,000 loan?
Yeah, he's pretty bad in this one. And their credit scores, like his wife is 500 and he's under 500.
Okay.
So mainly they want to get out of this property and get into one of my properties where they can fix their credit back up and get another mortgage on a house where it's a better interest rate. This interest, this mortgage is actually going to adjust in 8 months also.
It's going to go up?
Yes.
So how much more is it going to go up?
That I don't know.
Because you can find
I don't know if I can help him in this. So
okay. And what do you think it'll rent for?
I could probably get 19 for it.
Well, that seems high. Is that high or is that realistic?
That's about where it is. It's a 3-bedroom, 1.5 bath in a good area,
right.
In a good neighborhood. So yeah, we could probably get that.
What happens if they don't get it sold?
I'm thinking they're headed for foreclosure.
Okay. Is their credit damaged at this point?
Very much so.
Okay. And is it,
there's some medical issues happened, and like they're in 5, and he's below 5.
Is the payment on time?
Yes.
Okay. So the option that you've got is if you take it subject to, you're taking a bit of a risk with that loan because it kind of stinks. If you can find a tenant who's serious about buying it and might even qualify in 6 months or a year, then that person, it might be worth doing a subject to. But there's not much equity there for you to keep it just a short period of time.
Exactly.
You can also, you could just turn around and sell it as a lease option and get them the $1,900. They know that their adjustment's going to come. Can they afford it when their adjustment comes? And, when it goes vacant again, can they afford to handle it for a while at that time? Sounds like they've got a little bit of reserves here, and that might make sense for them rather than going into foreclosure.
Yeah, I'm also a real estate agent as well. And so I even worked up like how much it would cost them for closing as well as the commissions on it. And they would probably just break even you know, with if we sold it for that price. But as you know, the market right now, not to say they'll get that price.
Right. Well, if you sold it on a rent to buy, you could sell it for, you know, maybe $230, $240 rent to buy, so that there's enough money for them to cover your commission later on if they buy it.
Okay.
Plus, you can get the lease option fee up front. So what may make sense for you is to get it into the MLS as a lease option at the $1,900 a month and have them take a negative when it bumps. Or, you know, if it's not bumping for a year, you can also raise the rent in a year and make it a 2 or 3 year lease option. And then try to find somebody who's going to be able to qualify. But a lot of lease options, maybe a third of them are going to exercise their option. Maybe it's even less than that. But if you guess a third of them, if you can find somebody who's going to qualify and then really help them go through the process to get qualified, you're going to make another 6%, and which basically is not going to cost them anything because you're going to raise the price to do that.
Okay.
So you're going to raise the price. I think it would make a lot of sense for you. That way, it's still their property, but you're going to make all the money on it.
Okay.
I mean, that would be a really sweet situation for you. And if they don't exercise it, you don't take any risk.
Okay, yeah, because I've done, like, tons of the for-rent methods, and this was really going to be, like, my first subject, too, and I was like, I don't know if I want to take the risk of it adjusting in 8 months, you know, because then I don't know if it's going to adjust again after that. Look what kind of mortgage he's got on there.
Well, it's probably got a 6.2 adjustable, which is what's normal, so it can probably only go up 2% in a year. You need to find out how much it's already gone up, and if it goes up 2% on $200,000, you're looking at about $140. So it's not a huge jump that's going to happen, and it might make sense for you. And depending on what your income is and where you're at, it might make sense to even take a negative. A $200 a month negative on a deal like this wouldn't be bad at all,
right?
Because you're going to make that much just in your tax depreciation off of your general income. You know, if you're like a lot of realtors, you don't show a lot of income because you can deduct everything. But if you're showing some income, or your husband is, or you know, whatever, if you're filing jointly, then you can offset a lot of that income with your depreciation. And if you sell it for more than it's worth, which you would be able to do on a lease option, as long as you can get that $1,900, and that's my question on this deal. But you probably know the market a lot better than I do in that area. So if you think you can get the $1,900, I think it wouldn't be a bad deal for you at all. And I think that you could also tell them, like, I'll take this and I'll make the payments on it. But I got to tell you, if it becomes to a situation where I can't make the payments on it anymore, I'm going to give it back to you. Now, I won't drive it into the ground. I'll do everything I can to make it solve the problem. But I want you to know that I'll do the best I can, but I can't guarantee anything. That way, you can exonerate yourself emotionally from the situation before the problem happens. And my guess is they'd still accept it because they probably trust you. So you got a bunch of different options there, and just depending on which one makes the most sense. Now, so you've been doing a lot of for rents?
Yes, I have.
That's awesome. Because I bet there's a lot of sellers out there that can't sell their properties right now.
Yeah, to get sellers, I do your the voice blast, which is awesome. I sent one out on Monday, and by today I have gained 10 more sellers.
Wow.
And it's very easy because they're just, practically, as soon as they hear my voicemail, they're just like, okay, I'll do it.
Exactly.
That's pretty easy because they all want my buyers. But the only thing that I'm having problems with my buyers is I'm doing the bandit sign with the for rent, no qualifying, my phone number and my website, but I'm getting people who can't quite qualify for the houses that I have, you know, because they want houses that are a little bit less for rent.
Right.
So I think my next step is to go back to my sellers and go, okay, you know, we're willing to do like a negative cash flow for a little while until this thing sells.
Exactly.
You know, just to get them going and get it off my plate, because I don't like holding on to them for a long time, because then they start going, okay, what's going on?
Yeah, and if you do a constant follow-up with them, if you set them into you have an autoresponder set up yet?
That's what I'm setting up now. I'm working on that now.
So you've got the push-button stuff, right?
Yes, I do.
So there's a seller series in there, which you can modify because your realtor, you can do other things for them, but you can modify that series to make sure they get contacted every week. It'll also help you get rid of all your nobody will ever pull their listing on you again if you contact them every week.
Exactly.
I mean,
I'm just working with buyers, you know, because that's of course where the money is in this market, and it's been good.
Right.
So
But also keep in mind what Bob was talking about by going out there in the MLS. There's a bunch of them that are listed rent to buy. So once you have a buyer and they qualify, then go find them a property in the MLS and charge them a lease option fee and get the co-op, which may only be a few hundred bucks on the lease option deal, and the potential for the commission later on, the co-op and the commission later on.
Wonderful.
Yeah, this stuff. I mean, the stuff that I'm teaching for a real estate agent, it'll explode your business. Now you're using a small part of it, but there's so much more.
I know. I mean, I really haven't gotten into much. I mean, I looked like in the push button, it doesn't really go into agents that much.
Right.
Down, it went into it a little bit, you know, of branding and things like that, but it didn't really go into how it works.
Right. Now, there's so many things that you can do to explode your business as an agent that really you should be doing. I mean, even if you're just doing the stuff that I teach in that program, there's a lot of stuff in there just by building that list and keeping in touch with them and getting them qualified and finding them properties and all those people that all those sellers. I mean, they may not want to do the subject to or the lease option, but they still need to sell their property, so you could list the property for them and get them to drop their price. And
exactly.
And some of them can and some of them can't, but then you might have investors that want to take them over, because like this one you talked about, this $210,000 property that may have $200 a month negative on it in the next 6 months or whatever. There's a bunch of investors out there that would die for that. And then you could put the investor in it, charge them a few thousand bucks. You put the buyer in it, you charge them a few thousand bucks, you know, and you charge the seller some money. So you're making money all the way around.
I like that.
Plus you get a commission on it if they exercise the option.
Exactly. And I am also doing the mortgage guy as well. I have a great mortgage guy that's qualifying my people as well, so I'm making money off of him also.
Good, good. Well, awesome. I'm glad. It's always good to hear people using the stuff.
Yeah, it works.
Congratulations.
Got to do it.
Yeah. No, that's what it is. They get rich quick. This is about doing the work.
Yeah.
And it's not digging ditches. It's not that hard, but you got to do it or you don't make any money.
Exactly.
All righty. Well,
that's
good time.
Great. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks, Julie. All righty. Well, I guess I'm going to wrap it up. Bob, do you have any final comments?
No, it was good joining the call again, though. Thank you.
Well, it's sure nice having you on. It was a surprise to have you, but I'm glad you're here. Yep. All right, everybody. Thank you much, and we'll talk to you next time.
Take care, Jake.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.